Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. Gulnara Karimova, the eldest daughter of Uzbekistan's deceased former president Islam Karimov, is again in the headlines. The latest rumors are that a compromised agreement might be in the horizon between her and the authorities, in which, in exchange to her release, Gulnara will return millions of dollars of public money she has allegedly embezzled. But yet, there are so many unknowns in this discussion. First, what amount are we talking about? Second, what her freedom will look like in case it is granted? Third, why authorities are doing this? And lastly, what does the timing tell us? Other than Gulnara, it's also been a quiet week in Central Asia. In Kyrgyzstan, the battle of presidents, the current president Jeenbekov and former president Atambayev, is again heating up to the point that the former president might get detained anytime soon. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Fatima Kanji, researcher with the State Crime and Corruption for Human Rights Initiative Project, Alisher Ilhamov, researcher with the School of Oriental and African Studies, Zamira Ishanova, senior editor with the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, Ozotlik, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Hello.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. So let's start with you, Alisher. I think, I don't have to repeat all the headlines in which Gulnara Karimova is being currently discussed these days. So how do you read all these? What's happening?
What we learned from the most recent statement, now there is a kind of little doubt that actually this is indeed was made on behalf of her, given the fact that on the following day, the Swiss authorities themselves published their own press release, which corresponding to what she's saying to some extent. You know, what is clear that she's ready to kind of to give up $130 million. This 130 million, actually, they being registered in the name of Madumarov. That's why they separating this amount from the following amount, which is $555 million, actually, which is actually was registered in the name of Avakian. But what was notable in this statement, the fact that actually she's not saying anything about the rest of the amount. And we know that in Switzerland, around 800 million francs, which is almost the same amount in terms of US dollars, was frozen from the very beginning. We don't know the composition. We didn't know the details about the composition's money, but it was already reported from the very beginning. And we see the kind of difference between the sum of 130 million and 555 and the 800 million. It's around the difference around 129 million. And we know, for instance, what might be at the stake is her villa, which is would cost maybe around 80 million, the amount for which she bought it. And also we know that there are 9 or 8 deposit boxes in the bank, which were also frozen. And according to some kind of insider information, it was full of jewelry and gold. No idea about what the total value of that those deposits, but it's actually correspond to this kind of missing figure of in terms of difference between what she's saying about and how much the Swiss authorities were investigating. So this lack of information about the fate of 190 or maybe 29 and 100 million kind of might be indications that there might be some kind of settlement with third parties about kind of ceding this money to someone else, and nobody is providing any kind of details about that. This lack of transparency raising the concern because the Swiss authorities have own regulation and guaranteeing the transparency and accountability in the process of asset return, and also the signed up to the so-called GFAR principles. So the principles which were adopted by a Global Forum for Asset Recovery in December 2017. One of the 10 principles which were adopted at the time was kind of the providing guarantees of full transparency accountability this respect. So we still need kind of more information about the fate of this money.
We need information about lots of other things too, Alisha. Like, I believe she also has a couple of villas. You know, I think there is some money frozen in the U.S. banks, like lots of things. Fatima, you just came back from Geneva, I believe, right? Maybe you have more information into this. I mean, I know your keen interest in Gulnara case and your research and everything. So anything you can add into this discussion as to the issues, the questions that Alisher has raised in terms of transparency? And overall, what do you see happening?
Firstly, thank you so much for inviting me. And I think Alisher has given a really comprehensive overview of the case as it stands right now, including the status of her assets, including where each of them are held and in what form. Really interestingly, actually, one thing I did want to add to what Alisher said was that she had also, via Iman's, her daughter's Instagram account, allegedly stated that she had returned $1.2 billion approximately US dollars to the Uzbek government to benefit the state coffers. But on the 27th, which was yesterday of June, the finance ministry published a statement on its official Facebook account stating that no amount of that value had entered the budget, but it had raised $20.2 million US dollars last year from the seizure of jewelry and foreign currency from Karimova, and a further $11.8 million in the same way this year. So there seems to be a slight discrepancy between what the government is saying and allegedly what the Instagram account of Iman Karimova is also saying. And one thing that we've been doing as civil society and a group of academics, we've been coordinating international civil society efforts on this issue to ensure the responsible repatriation of assets back to Uzbekistan, ensuring that the victims of corruption, which are ultimately the Uzbek people, the funds are repatriated in a manner that ensures remediation for the harm caused. Because we, of course, know the system of governance that operated at that point in time and the detrimental effect that had. And in keeping, as Alisher mentioned, with the GFAR principles, that state that the funds should not only go towards victims of corruption, but also ensuring that those that caused the harm in the first place, i.e. Gulnara, as well as those surrounding her, both immediately, but also in the periphery, do not in any way benefit from those funds. Yeah. And so one thing that civil society is committed to doing is ensuring that those funds do go back responsibly in a manner that's open and transparent, that we can equally track, and is in line with. There was an Uzbek civil society proposal for the framework for return that was published last year, and so we're really seeking to promote that framework for return and ensuring that the voices of the Uzbek people are at the heart of the return framework.
Fatima took the follow-up question. I mean, anyone is listening to you when you raise these demands that you have? And also, you know, there were so many numbers, like millions here, a couple of millions there. What amount that we are talking about here?
So right now, it's if we're completely honest, we're still unclear of the exact amount. A lot of the amounts that we have been able to ascertain have come both from media reportings as well as the US DOJ civil claims that were submitted about half a decade ago. So that's where we're getting a lot of our information from. For me, it was new to learn that there was $1.2 billion allegedly in Uzbekistan. So that's a new amount for us that we were unaware of before. As Alisher mentioned, we're looking at approximately $800 million in Switzerland. We're looking at approximately around, and these are ballpark figures, anywhere between 100 and 300 million in Ireland. And obviously, they're equally assets held elsewhere in Luxembourg and Belgium. So the total amount at this stage, it's still unclear. But if we are,
it's more than a billion actually, together with both those bank assets actually, and also the real estate. So it's over around between 1 billion to 20 and 1 billion 100 million in total.
That's excluding the amount that Karimova allegedly said is in Uzbekistan. So as Alisher mentioned, it is between those two amounts, but it excludes the 1.2 allegedly in Uzbekistan, as well as the amounts that have just been confirmed by the Ministry of Finance.
Okay. Talking of the Karimova's money in Uzbekistan, or maybe Karimova repatriated some of the money to Uzbekistan, I think I was reading, Zamira, in you guys' news agenda today or yesterday, that Uzbek authorities have been saying that they have not received anything so far yet from Gulnara. Is it the case?
Yeah, this is Ministry of Finance, as we heard now. They yesterday made a statement that they did not receive that much amount of money. Gulnara mentioned it was her assets within Uzbekistan. So we are really talking about something which she held or head in Uzbekistan. So prosecutor's general office also was always kind of denying big numbers before mentioned in terms of Gulnara's assets in Uzbekistan and abroad. So again, we also don't know what is it. But what is interesting to us is that with a kind of help or maybe with the permission of the government, now in Uzbekistan, they started kind of testing public opinion.
That's interesting.
About Gulnara and if she should be forgiven, if she should be amnestied. And so this is parallel developments which very closely watching.
Yeah.
So
I was looking into this campaign. I think your report from yesterday, you know, there are
and
some.
And today also it's the number one issue, I mean, number one topic now. Uzbek users of social media debating.
Zamira, also it's interesting, like there are number of kind of public figures, at least from the showbiz, who are speaking in favor of Gulnara being released. And there. And today, I believe, Yulduz Osmanova, the famous singer.
Has changed today.
Yeah. And she was against it, against this?
What's... Yeah. First, you know, the funny thing is that Gulnara asked for forgiveness on Sunday, last Sunday, on June 23rd, via her daughter's Instagram. So next day, Swiss prosecutors announced that they decided to return 130 million Swiss francs back to Uzbekistan. And the same day in the evening, a very kind of known Uzbek showbiz representatives with millions of followers on social media, they started campaign that they missed Gulnara, she was a great person, and they're waiting for her to be released in coming days. And they started really reminding the public how much she done for art and culture of Uzbekistan. So with all these shiny, positive images of Gulnara. So this campaign was 24th and 25th of June, hype there was about this. Mm-hmm. And then after this well-known singer, Yulduz Osmanova, she made a video statement saying that she's a thief. Why you are defending? Why you are missing her? And then this debate turned into different tide. And today, I think the people are more expressing their frustration that she might be released in coming days, because there is this some information, some people from Tashkent government, they reached out us and they were telling us in coming days there might be another secret trial and Gulnara may get amnesty and released. So that's why they told us it might be a kind of checking public opinion. Mm. Which side, you know, majority would be. So far, 2 days the public was against, but today somehow it's changing again in her favor.
And it looks like authorities are not really saying anything about this.
They are just watching, and some of them said we have nothing to do. This is just an expression of public opinion. We have nothing to do. But some bloggers told us that some officials from presidential administration, they called. And they asked some bloggers, again, with lots of numbers of followers on social media to participate in this campaign. Yeah. But we don't have, of course, so far confirmation that this is orchestrated by the government.
Yeah, there is no confirmation. I believe we will never have a confirmation
like
this. But again, things like that, Bruce, doesn't happen without a green light.
Exactly. After 5 years of silence, all of a sudden show business, started talking, singing about, praises about Gulnara, so it's not accidental, I guess.
Yeah. And also, Bruce, if you can jump in here, I mean, in terms of the timing, when people are talking about this in favor or against Gulnara's release and everything, when the Swiss authorities saying that, explain us this complicated picture. What's really happening?
Well, boy, I wouldn't want to say I know anything for certain. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff going on around her. You know, even international rights organizations have been stepping up their campaign lately to say, guilty, not guilty, whatever, she deserves to have a fair trial. There's got to be a process. We know that her Swiss lawyer was out there recently. He was on Twitter saying she was in miserable condition, suffering greatly, So there was no way to avoid the topic, So there's that aspect. Back to it too. I'm sure they would like to clear the table and not have to listen to years of this you know, complaining from rights organizations about what's going on with her. There's also the thought that, you know, Uzbekistan could certainly use the money. Mirziyoyev keeps talking about all these great changes he wants to make, and how, you know, they just need foreign investment and things like that. So, you know, the sums that we're talking about are not insignificant. I mean, it's not a huge amount of money that would save Uzbekistan's economy or turn it in a different direction. But then again, it's also enough that I'm sure the Uzbek government would like to get a hold of it. You know, so the first part of the process, you know, as Fatma mentioned, there's got to be a lot of transparency here, but they're not going to get any of that money back until they show that they've run Gulnara through a judicial process that has somehow decided that she should be freed or kept in jail. But it's got to be open to everybody, and from that point then you can start to talk about the repatriation of money and do some more investigations. She says, you know, Gulnara says she's going to be cooperative. We've heard about money that's mainly in Europe, but we know that she owned property in Gulf states. We know she owned property in Russia. You know, so I mean, this 1.2 billion or whatever could be like really the tip of the iceberg, and there's a lot of things that have to happen to get that money back.
Yeah, on my end, I have no understanding of this legal procedure, but given that that there are so many legal cases against Gulnara in Europe, in U.S., all relating to her money and alleged corruption that she had, even if Gulnara wants to return this money, can she legally do that?
So if we're looking at the case of, and this will be done, I suppose, on if we take Switzerland for as an example, and of course I'm not a Swiss lawyer, so pardon me on that front, but it would very much be a case of it's currently under the judicial process right now, and the outcome of that process will then dictate the extent to which the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Switzerland and others are then able to negotiate a settlement with the government of Uzbekistan, which and that can involve other ancillary actors as well in that process. We've seen the government of Uzbekistan negotiating directly with Karimova, allegedly according to Iman's Instagram account. So anything is possible, I think, in this case. But as Bruce mentioned, it's incredibly important that we ensure that the due process rights of Karimova are upheld, and equally that any trial that does take place is done in an open, in a transparent and accessible manner that respects due process rights, but equally allows the submission of evidence as and platform for all parties involved, so there's an equilibrium on both sides.
Before that happened, actually, the kind of following standards of transparency and accountability in the process of return, before that, actually, what actually those Uzbek activists called for last year was to address those institutional kind of the factors which drove the process of bribe extortion you know, in the telecom industry. Yeah. If, for instance, the government of Uzbekistan doesn't address those issues, and for so far they hadn't yet, then there is a high likelihood that the money could be stolen over again or mismanaged. This is actually the probably for the moment the main concern. Under what conditions does the Swiss government would return these assets to Uzbekistan? Was there some preconditions or would be set up in order to kind of first of all to give to for Uzbek government to do some homework before they would get money back into the country? And that would go against one of those 10 principles which were adopted by GFOR, which also indicating that the money should not end up with under control of those people who committed those crimes or who were at least complicit. What we know in Uzbekistan that those trails actually which took place on this Gulnara alleged corruption and the money laundering took place in 2015 and then 2017, and now we're talking about a new possible trial will actually not meet any standards of the fair trial transparency, and that's actually create a problem that actually so many gaps of accountability, the transparency, and the kind of lacking of any kind of following standards of fair trial, which on the base of which this deal with Uzbekistan will be kind of reached.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. Like, yeah, for Uzbek authorities, the money aspect of that is important, but what about her other alleged crimes, like money laundering, corruption, which was, I believe, the reason for her detention in the first place? I mean, where that would go, you know, at the time when we are talking about her possible freedom, how that process will work? Alisha, do you want to continue?
We don't know yet. Actually, what we know actually that the Swiss law requires the Swiss government in negotiating with the country receiving the assets to provide some guarantees that the money will be used for the interest of the people, and that will actually serve towards the establishing rule of law. But the main problem, when this country receiving assets would address the issues of rule of law at the end of the process of return, before receiving the assets. So the, in our view, in the view of the civil society organizations, activists who raised their own concern last year, this should happen first. The first Uzbek government should make their homework to move toward establishing the standards of rule of law, independence of judiciary, and then maybe reconduct this trail over this Gulnara case in order to come up with a judgment which will meet standards of the due process. And only that, after based on this kind of process, the asset return would be really clean of the, any kind of corruption. Because for the moment, how it looks for observers, actually, it looks like another kind of bribery. Gulnara is seeking freedom, actually, to be released from the prison. In exchange for that, she's giving consent for giving those money and returning to Uzbekistan. So that's only her role, actually, changing from bribe-taking to bribe-giving.
Hmm.
Bribe-giving to whom? To the government, in exchange for her freedom. That is actually impression regarding the, regardless
that's
of the
yeah.
kind of specific legal proceedings and process. This is how the overall situation looks like.
What you are saying is she is bribing her release out of jail.
Yeah, yes. That's this it looks like overall, actually, at end.
Very interesting. So let's say that she is released. Then what? How much of freedom authorities will be comfortable to give her, and what is next in this discussion? So while the former Uzbek president's daughter might be finally released from jail, the possibility for a former Kyrgyz president, Atambayev, going to jail is getting serious. So what is that we should keep our eyes on to understand where things are headed? We will continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis I'm joined by Fatima Kanji, researcher with the State Crime and Corruption for Human Rights Initiative Project. Alisher Ilhamov is joining us, who's researcher with the School of Oriental and African Studies. Zamira Ishanova, senior editor with Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, Ozotlik. And Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, blog, Kishlak Ovozi. I'm Mohamed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the latest developments involving the possible release of Gulnara Karimova, the daughter of Uzbekistan's former president, and some of the latest developments surrounding Kyrgyzstan's former president, Atambayev. Okay, so let's say, Bruce, Gulnara is freed. What her freedom will look like? How much of freedom authorities can afford to give her?
Well, you know, first thing I got to say is I have already been on record as saying I didn't think she would get out of prison anytime soon. So I've already been proven wrong. If she does get out, then I'm proven wrong on that to begin with.
I still find it hard to imagine
they would let her leave the country.
Why you say that, Bruce?
Well, you know, we did a podcast on her a while back, and I just couldn't imagine that she was going to get out of prison. There was no talk about her getting out of prison. There was talk about where all her money was, but no one was even considering that she should be released. You know, as Zamira mentioned earlier in the show, there's this campaign going on social networks, which seems to indicate that someone in the government is testing the waters and seeing if it wouldn't be possible to release her or whatever. So I would be surprised that she would be released from prison at all right now, considering the scope and magnitude of her crimes, what she's been accused of. If she is guilty, she certainly should do more than 4 or 5 years in prison. But, you know, that said, if she does get out, of course, she knows a lot about what's been happening with the government for a long, long time. And all of some of the top officials, including the current president. And it would again be difficult for me to believe that they would just let her go to some other country where she could get back on Twitter and other social media and, you know, start telling stories about what was going on, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And who was involved in it. You know, it could do a lot of damage to the credibility of very high officials in Uzbekistan. And so, I would find it hard to believe that they would be willing to, if she was let go, would think that they wouldn't want her to leave the country, certainly.
who follows her daughter's Twitter feed. I think that's one of the only channels that we get to know the Gulnara side of the story these days. So what kind of freedom the Gulnara family imagines that she will have in case she's released? Anything her daughter is saying, Iman is saying about this?
She's calling for releasing from prison, actually letting Gulnara to leave the country in order to get adequate medical treatment, observations. This is her intention. I agree with Bruce that actually they would unlikely would happen in the close future. What would be most likely would may take place is to move her from prison to again to the under condition of home arrest, kind of. The government would provide a more comfortable condition for their daily life, but releasing her from prison totally, fully, and letting her to leave the country would raise huge risk for the for the current rulers, for Mirziyoyev, for Mr. Aripov, Prime Minister, and others. Actually, be difficult to guarantee that he will not speak up again against those who were involved first in this deal with her, with the telecom companies, the way definitely were involved, and those who actually put her in prison.
It would also be interesting to hear the human rights perspective on this, Fatima. We are not sure, even if she's released, there's a discussion going on in favor and against of her release, and there are lots of unanswered questions about the money. I mean, why authorities are even doing this?
Yeah, I think I think in this case, obviously she was previously under house arrest. She's now back in prison again, from what we know. And I think very much at the heart of all of this is the fact that Gulnara knows a lot about those in high positions of power, including the president, the prime minister, and others. And I sense that there's a potential fear from their side that, like, if they had engaged in other nefarious activities similar to what Karimova had done, they would then be held accountable in some ways by Karimova's accounts if she were to release those, right? But I think very much at the heart of all of this equally is the fact that it's not about whether I agree or disagree on whether she should be released or not, but that she should be tried in accordance with the rule of law, that her due process rights are respected, and equally that it's done so in a manner that's open, transparent, and public, so that equally the victims of corruption, the Uzbek people, can actually engage in this process, but also understand what had happened and potentially what is happening, because they ultimately were the biggest losers. They were the victims in all of this. So it's really important that a trial does take place, so we fully understand what had taken place and hold those that were involved to account.
Wow, that also includes the Prime Minister. Bruce, let me get back to you on this. From the authorities' perspective, the fact that we are talking about Gulnara's possible release, though, from the authorities' perspective, this is about the money?
No, I mean, that's obviously a big part of it. You know, like I said, she's drawing a lot of bad publicity on the government right now. They've made a big deal out of releasing a lot of people who were considered political prisoners before, since Mirziyoyev came to power. You know, I mean, and we've heard, and I made the argument too, that most of the people they let go had spent a lot of time in prison and were elderly and fairly harmless at this point. But they wanted, you know, some recognition for the fact that they were taking this step. And now after doing that, I think, you know, the plight of Gulnara is now weighing on the reputation of Uzbekistan, as these other political prisoners weighed on the reputation of Uzbekistan. And I think they just want that out of the way. You know, they want to move their economy forward. They're going to need foreign investment. They're going to need cooperation from a lot of governments, including governments in the West. And, you know, like Gulnara, don't like her, whatever, the fact that she's in prison and hasn't been entitled to an open trial, you know, I mean, let's face it, we found out she was in prison. She was imprisoned, you know, and there was a court verdict against her, you know, very suddenly. It had already taken place before that was even announced. You know, so it was at that level. So, this is just the kind of bad publicity the Uzbek government does not want right now, as they try to move forward with their own plans. And I think they just want this, you know, settled and out of the way. You know, the money is a big part of it, but they don't want the bad publicity that comes with keeping her locked up and having her lawyer visit and say that, you know, she's can't stand up practically, you know, she's in horrible condition, badly in need of medical help, you know, those kind of things. It just doesn't make the government look good.
Okay. Let me take, Alisher, your point in this. I mean, what the authorities are driven by.
Yeah, there is Bruce, but in the same time, it's sort of the way how they trying to rid of this case. You know, they're kind of to by releasing the Gulnara, possibly, or putting her under condition of home arrest. This sending kind of a wrong message to the potential investors. So the message they're receiving from this case is that even if actually it's this problem is facing kind of receiving some solution, it's being done through a series of deals behind the door. This is the ultimate message, that in this country, you can protect your interest and your kind of right of ownership, not through the open process, by filing your complaint, the cases, and through a judicial process, a transparent process, but through reaching out to the authorities and reaching the settlements behind the door. This is the main problem for the moment.
Okay, Fatima, so what is that you will be keeping an eye going forward in this latest discussion around Gulnara to determine where it's headed?
Yeah, I think there are a number of things here. I think we're going to be monitoring quite closely developments that take place, firstly, in Uzbekistan, and the government responses to obviously her to Iman's ongoing allegations of the $1.2 billion that's allegedly there, because that in fact is an equal cause of concern for us, because if it's then subsumed $1.2 billion into the state coffers, then we're unable to actually trace where those funds go, who's benefiting from those funds, whether those funds have been misappropriated, and if so, where those funds end up going. And there's the real risk of a repeat of what had happened with Karimova then happening here again, if we're unable to ensure kind of those fundamental principles of transparency, accountability, due diligence having been met. Equally, we're also going to be looking very closely and monitoring very closely the developments that are now taking place in Switzerland in particular, obviously with a note of the other countries where her assets are held, but ongoing developments are taking place there, and in particular it comes down to the Swiss response in looking at the framework and modality for return, for ensuring that it's not a direct return that takes place. But we're very much going to be advocating for the funds to be spent in line with the Uzbek civil society proposal that was published last year, which very much spoke to the need to ensure that the funds are used in a manner that supports the victims of corruption, but equally are pegged against seeing very concrete changes. And these changes are against the context within which Karimova's criminal syndicate was able to operate. And so that's going to be another principal concern for us. And equally, looking at the judicial process that's taking place in Switzerland and taking place there, along with negotiations.
Right. Okay, terrific. Thank you very much, Fatima. So, we are way out of time. I'm not sure even if we can touch Kazakhstan. But let's briefly look into, Bruce, what's going on with former president of Kyrgyzstan, Atambayev? What's latest and what you will be looking at going forward in this confrontation?
Yes, quite a segue, huh? Former President Atambayev has never done himself any favors with his positions and his remarks. Even when he was president, we had all these problems. The idea that he's barricaded himself in his family compound and saying that he has people with guns and that they'll use them if someone comes to detain him. This is clearly unhelpful. He was invited to parliament. He thought that they were going to just ride him into the ground, which they probably would have. But he did have a chance to go and speak in front of parliament and try to deny all the accusations against him. Instead, he decided he was going to barricade himself inside the family compound and call all his supporters to come and surround him and hold out as long as he could. I think his days are seriously numbered at this point. I don't know if the government is going to actually go and try to detain him or just leave him there and to go hungry eventually, a war of attrition, so to speak. But I think we see the path he's headed on, that they're going to put him on trial. It's almost inevitable.
Yeah. Alisher, you know your focus is in Uzbekistan, but is it something that you would like to say about Kyrgyzstan? Especially, I'm kind of curious, I mean, why was President Jeenbekov, the current president, is so much consumed by Atambayev? Why he's doing this?
Well, my kind of perception, take of this kind of development is that he was considered by Atambayev as a kind of puppet who would just fulfill his will, while Atambayev would actually act behind the door, which didn't take place, actually didn't happen. So now it's evolved into the conflict between these people, actually two persons. And given the fact that Atambayev is still enjoying certain political influence in the country, certain support, certain kind of loyalty base, that it's understandable that the Jeenbekov would actually fear of any kind of plots, conspiracies against him from groups loyal to Atambayev. This is ultimately speaking about this, the system of patronage, which is still governing affairs in those countries, in both in Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan. And it's quite logical that those who leaving the office, presidential office, kind of fell victim of the same system, of this system of patronage. And he had a chance, you know, Atambayev, during his tenure of the president, to move the country towards more establishing rule of law, the independent judiciary, the kind of transparent and accountable government. He did little about that, and now he kind of falling a victim of the same kind of his own legacy.
Right.
This is a message sending to other authoritarian leaders. Actually, they have two options in this situation. One is kind of going ahead with reforming further the system, especially this message sending to the Mirziyoyev, who kind of stuck between the absence of reforms and the full range of reforms, or going back to the kind of strict authoritarian rules, actually, and not leaving the presidential office at all. Right. In order to make sure that actually nobody will actually challenge him in the future.
Right. Thank you very much. In conclusion, let me just say this, that because of summer holidays, we might take a short break, skipping, I think, two or three episodes, unless there was any earth-breaking, earth-shaking development. So it's been a full year, and all of us deserves some quiet time. So with this, thank you very much, Alisher Ilhamov, for being part of this historical debate. And also big thanks goes to Fatima Kanji, researcher with the Crime and Corruption for Human Rights Initiative Project, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia Bloc, Kishlok Owazi, and Zamira Ishanova, senior editor with Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, Azotlik. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and
thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.